This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Courtney Stewart, star reporter over at The Hook, online at readthehook.com, joins me live in studio. How was your Christmas? Was it nice?
It was lovely.
Santa was good to the boys? Everybody's happy?
Santa was good. Yeah. How about you?
Very good. Yeah. I had one of the best. I got this. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? I love that.
Wow, that is nice.
It's an Iron Man Timex like running watch.
That is.
Because I've been doing a lot more running lately.
A lot
lately.
More running.
So now I can do my split time and my start time. And I'm very excited about it. One gift that comes to mind that you got that you were just real excited about?
A flat screen TV.
Wow. Courtney, you scored. I want one of those.
Santa was nice to me.
Yeah, you got a big flat screen TV.
It's
nice.
Not that big, but
to me, every flat
watching,
screen TV is
I've been watching for the last like 5 years on a 12-inch television. So I think I paid my dues.
You
I
definitely
can now
have.
See the television shows that I'm watching.
You deserve that. Is it one of those high def jobs? It's absolutely
yeah.
Beautiful?
It's not like super fancy. It was a, I'm sure, a discounted model.
Yeah, but you got a nice new flat screen.
I now can see the figures on my screen from more than, like, I don't have to be 4 feet away anymore.
Good stuff. Courtney Stewart is with us, so let's begin our exploration of the most significant news stories of 2010 with the story of which I think was certainly one of the biggest. You've been on this story for years, and it was obviously the biggest news story here in December. And that was the arrest of charges with murder against Eric Abshire. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is that he is he's behind bars in the Central Virginia Regional Jail. He was arrested December 17th and charged with first degree murder and perjury. There haven't been any press conferences or other than an initial announcement of the arrest, and he has his first court date January 6th. And that's sort of unusual because usually you have a hearing within a few days of your arrest. But in his case, the arrest followed, an indictment by this special grand jury that had been investigating for more than a year, like a year and a half, maybe even close to 2 years. And they issued an indictment. And so he's being held without bond. And because of the holiday schedule, there were no days available for him to get in front of the judge. So he will have been in there for close to 3 weeks. When he finally does get his day, his first day in court.
So what actually happens on the 6th?
My understanding is that that'll be the day when they say, have you retained counsel or do you need one? Do you qualify for court-appointed counsel? I mean, when you have a serious charge like this.
So it's a process thing, really. It's no big, the trial doesn't start or
no,
anything.
No. I mean, I think at that point, it's a very early hearing. There won't be a preliminary hearing like there is when you're just arrested and they have to show probable cause because of this investigative grand jury that has already indicted. Usually you have this hearing in the district court and the judge says, okay, I now certify this to grand jury. Well, they bypass that whole thing in this case.
We're talking with Courtney Stewart. So Courtney, the years you've been writing about this story, you know these people. You've spent time with all of these people. You really know this story so much better than so many of us. Were you surprised that he was arrested, or did you just think it was a matter of time before they finally...
Well, I don't think it's been... I mean, it has not been a secret at all that her parents and her family, her sister, have all expressed their doubts about his story, and then increasingly their, you know, really suspicion that he had played a role in her death. And I think police were also maybe less forthcoming in that in saying those things, but it was clear that they were heading down that same road. So I didn't know when an arrest would come or what he might be charged with, but and I certainly was surprised the day that it happened. I was sort of shocked that it was so close to Christmas and I wasn't expecting it at that time. But in hindsight, I think, you know, it has been coming.
And I guess the one of the things that a lot of people who've been following this story like you for years now are waiting to see is anybody else going to be implicated in this? Because that's been a theory of a lot of us who've been following this story very closely, is that other people had to have been involved at some point if Eric is guilty.
Well, I think that's certainly the theory that her parents are operating under, and it's why it's made clear in a civil suit that they filed. They filed it back in April, and maybe I'm not looking at the story right now, but it at least a year ago, I think April 2009. Yeah. They filed it, but they didn't start serving people until this past year. And so this names Eric, his brother, the mother of his children, his cousin, and then six John Does, who they believe conspired to kill her. But it doesn't give any details on how they think, you know, what they did to conspire.
And the alleged motive here is insurance money.
The alleged motive would be insurance money, and as much, you know, more than $1 million if you count this uninsured motorist rider that's on most people's auto insurance, where if you're hit by somebody, excuse me, who doesn't have insurance or who's underinsured, then your policy pays up. And Justine was on, her name was on this dump truck, this commercial truck, and that's why there's this giant amount, $1 million, in potential uninsured motorists to be paid out. Now,
what's her name doing why would her name have anything to do with the insurance,
you know,
of a dump truck?
Well, he, Eric, had a company and was, you know, at times did own large equipment trucks, various things for companies that he owned and he operated. This one, he said, you know, she could get better credit. She had better credit, so she could get a better rate. So that's why she was on it. So, you know,
I guess we'll see in court.
We'll see in court.
We'll see what kind of evidence
now.
The grand jury has come up with, because clearly they had enough to pull the trigger.
Well,
no pun intended, but
and undoubtedly
to pull the trigger on the indictment.
Yeah, and undoubtedly there's so much more than what I have written. I don't know. But there's got to be more for them to feel like they have a case for first degree murder.
Biggest story of December, and arguably definitely going to be one of the big stories of 2011.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it depends on how this plays out. I mean, if it's a giant trial, if other people ended up being indicted or arrested,
could be huge.
It could turn really enormous.
We're talking with Courtney Stewart of The Hook, talking about the most significant local news stories of 2010. What's your vote? What's your number one pick for the top local news story? 977-1070. Give me a call. Let me know. Staying on that subject of brutal crimes committed here and the big news stories of 2010, there's two obvious other picks that make your list.
Yeah. And not a happy year in this way with Morgan Harrington and Yardley Love. Morgan Harrington, of course, disappearing from the Metallica concert last in October of 2009, but her body was found in January of this year. And then that has just, it's been pretty quiet in recent months, but there was a lot going on at the time that happened, including their release of this sketch of a suspect whom they had linked by DNA, rapist who had attacked a woman in 2005 brutally, somehow
in Northern Virginia.
Northern Virginia, in Fairfax. So his DNA, it came out late this spring, was linked to the Morgan Harrington crime.
But they still haven't found this guy. There's no indictment. There's no arrest.
There's been nothing. I mean,
they just know that the guy who got Morgan Harrington, the DNA that they found with her body down here on 29 South, is the same DNA that they found with a woman who was raped and attacked in Northern Virginia.
Right.
Same dude. Yeah.
Well, right. I'm
assuming it's a guy, but
it's
yeah.
It's a dark-skinned male. I think they have described him as African-American, but they've sort of backed off that and now are just saying probably, you know, like could be anything, could be Latino.
Yeah.
But no word, nothing about that since then.
That's been really quiet
since
then.
It's been very quiet.
Yeah.
And her parents also, I think that they made some statements saying that it was time for them to sort of just back up a little and try to cope emotionally with just the utter profound devastation of this past year. And they'd been like keeping up this media parade, trying to keep the story in the public eye. And I think they
clearly that was
time.
One way that they were coping with it was staying engaged in that public conversation with the community,
right?
About what was going on.
Yeah, and surely we haven't heard the last of them. I mean, they will come out and do things and try to keep the case still in the public's memory and try to do whatever they can to push the investigation along. But I think it's been quiet recently.
Yeah, and of course the very tragic and nationally covered murder of Yardley Love,
which actually was named, I think, one of Time Magazine's top 10 crimes of the year. I don't know, you know, in terms of just, I guess, newsworthiness or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
Everybody covered it. Yeah,
yeah, everybody covered it. And that one, you know, we've got the Yardley Love dead and her former boyfriend, George Hughley, behind bars. And so there's been a little bit going on with that recently where his defense team just won the right to see her records. And they've been talking about the fact that she was taking Adderall and maybe that had something to do with her death rather than the fact that he said he shook her and her head slammed into the wall. So I think that's it seems like that's maybe heading towards a defense of I don't know what, but
yeah. What do they have? I mean, he's already told them. Yeah, I beat this girl and banged her head against the wall multiple times, and you know, and then I robbed her and took stuff out of her room. What kind of defense do they have? But then to
What's interesting, I think, is that you know, he's not charged with capital murder, even though he took the laptop. And I spoke with a legal expert at some point recently who said that if he had gone in there to steal her laptop and then killed her because he wanted her laptop, that would be capital murder. But because he killed her and then took the laptop in this kind of effort to perhaps cover up any evidence that might link him to it,
yeah,
that it's no longer a murder in commission of a robbery. It's sort of robbery in commission of a... Of a murder. Yeah. I mean,
so
a
what
homicide.
Is he actually charged with? Has he been charged with anything? Is there an actual charge on the books? Because I'm not quite sure. And I hate to throw that.
I think it's first degree murder.
Okay. But not capital murder.
No, not capital murder. And the whole argument that the defense is coming up with is probably going to be to try to get that down to a lesser charge because you have to prove intent. And did he really go there to kill her, or was he just mad? And did they get into a struggle? And then, you know, she had some underlying health issue that caused her to die more easily than someone else would have.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Either way, and I've said this before, and I guess you're not guilty until proven guilty, but he has already said that he beat her and left her for dead. He's already admitted to that. I mean, this is, and you know, all the news that came forward then of his history of violence, of just, you know, unprovoked, unexplained, you know, inexplicable violence against his teammates, against her. This was you know, a very poorly kept secret among his peers and the people who were close to him. We build prisons for people like that. That's all I want to say.
Well, that's why
we have prisons.
I think one of the things that maybe will come out of this case, hopefully, especially with Teresa Sullivan now trying to, I think, raise awareness at the school, is that bystander, like friend involvement and people who see these things happening need to take it really seriously, because a lot of people came forward and said, yeah, they had this huge altercation. I mean, obviously nobody expected it to escalate to the point that their friend, and who she was friends with, his, you know, they were both lacrosse players. So their friends, friends overlapped.
They ran all in the same circle.
Nobody wanted her to die. Nobody wanted this to happen, but I think they didn't really understand how serious things were getting.
Yeah. We're talking with Courtney Stewart, the most significant local news stories of 2010. Clearly, we won't get into it because we swim in it too much here on this program, but the water supply debate, going back and forth on that, that was a big news story of 2010.
Yeah.
Oliver Kuttner winning the X Prize and becoming a Hook Person of the Year of 2010. And another big story that came out of late this year, and I'm sure will be an even bigger story in 2011, because I know local journalists are on it, is Biscuit Run, which is, I don't want to use the word scam, but I guess I just did. What's the latest on this? Because I've read the stories that, you know, the Hook and Seville have done on this. This is really turning out to be, the more we learn about what happened with Biscuit Run, it's just amazing.
Well, you know, it's one of these things where when it was first announced, it's hard to be against a park. You know, it's like, everybody says, oh, great, a park. You know, everybody loves trails. Everybody loves wildlife. Everybody loves trees that have been saved. But as it's sort of unfolded, it turns out that really what was first sort of presented as a $9.8 million purchase of this large parcel that was slated to have 3,100 housing units on it just down Old Lynchburg Road, turns out the $9.8 million price tag was bolstered by the issuance of tax credits, land preservation tax credits. And so that amount was sort of the mystery of the year that every journalist anyway, and a lot of people who watch deals like this really wanted to know. And it was going to be based on an appraisal. And then sort of rumors of this bloated appraisal started circulating.
That's what I mean when I said scam.
Yeah. And so And so it's
they
really...
they found an appraiser to gin the numbers, because there was no way that that appraisal came through. There's no way that could be accurate.
Right, and the reason that was important is because for the investors who paid $46 million for this land and then sold it for $9.8 million, those tax credits had the potential to make up this massive loss and allow them to pay off a loan and do all this stuff. And so they had real reason to want this land to appraise for just a astronomical sum, and it looks like they found somebody
in Orange,
to say why, yes, this land was worth, what a good deal the state got. This land was actually worth $88.7 million. And even as the Virginia Department of Transportation was saying, no, their own assessor was saying $12 million. So they go through this whole thing, and then it turns out that the Department of Taxation comes in and says, well, no, we actually think it's more like $39 million that it's worth. Which is still causing a lot of people, you know, to say, "What? You know, what are you? You know, you? How could this land have ever sold for $39 million
in this economy?"
And so that resulted in the issuance of almost $12 million in tax credits. Still means the Forest Lodge developers lost huge money, but
They didn't lose as much because the public ran to their rescue and bailed them out.
Right. And it looks like they may be trying to dispute that and try to get that 88, you know, at least get it to be pushed up a little higher.
They're still trying to get more money.
They're still trying to get more money. And, you know, I can understand why they would want that money.
Yeah. Courtney Stewart at the Hook online at readthehook.com. And before we let you go, I guess the other big story of 2010 was the monument to the economy on our downtown mall.
Why, yes, you must be talking about the Landmark Hotel.
What's the latest on that? I mean,
you know, I don't know, but I think...
I've heard people say now it's going to be apartments, or it's...
Well, I
could
think...
Could be apartments.
That was one of the things we asked Oliver Kuttner as part of the year-end story where he was Person of the Year. His suggestion was that really it could be made into apartments. There's been this belief that because the ceilings are so low, it's only suited as a hotel. But he says, no, if you just take away two floors and make those for the AC and all the duct work and everything that needs to go in, if you dedicated two floors to that, you could have a really beautiful apartment building that would work just fine. The question is, when's that going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah, and who's going to do it?
I mean, or is that thing just going to sort of rust into the... You know, just rust into the next century.
Who knows? Courtney Stewart, you can read her work online at readthehook.com. And happy new year to you, and thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Coy. Happy new year.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.